Good evening, welcome. I always want to say it's nice to be here, but I guess even though I'm here by myself, but it's I am imagining that there are people out there that are listening. And whether it's in real time or at a later time, I'm just appreciating that there are other practitioners. So, I think it's probably safe to say that at least once in the history of everybody's meditation practice, there's been a time in which there's been difficult experiences or uncomfortable experiences. And there might be a time in which the inner critic gets activated, and then there's this little voice saying, I can't do this. Everybody else can do this, it seems, but I can't do this. Or maybe there's this voice that says, why am I even meditating anyway? Like, it probably doesn't work. Or something along the lines of, I'm not sure about this practice. That teacher, they don't understand. Their life has been probably easy peasy, and they don't understand the difficulties that I have, and these suggestions for practice, that's for other people, not for me. Or the Buddha, that was so long ago. Do we even know that the Buddha existed? So these kinds of thoughts. These thoughts that really aren't supportive, aren't helpful. But there's a sense of agitation with them, a kind of like a lack of settling down. And there's also a sense of swirling, maybe, that they aren't really landing anywhere or going anywhere. They're just kind of, I can't do this, and I don't know why I think I can do these things, and here's just proof that I can't do it, or, you know, something along these lines. Of course, we don't have these kinds of thoughts when our meditation is settled or when there's a certain amount of ease. We're not questioning the validity of the practice or or our capabilities. But it's only when there's some difficulties, and it's perfectly natural, right? When we have some resistance, some difficulties, it's that there might be some thoughts that arise around this. But a consequence of this type of thinking is that we stop being engaged with what's actually happening. Instead, we're lost in this thought pattern, this thought train that's going, and we're like, is this practice work? Is it going to work for me? And what is the best practice? Maybe I should be doing metta, kind of like have some open-heartedness and then go to the mindfulness. But it's hard to do metta unless I'm settled. Maybe I should do some concentration practice. I don't even really know how to do concentration practice. Okay, so I'll just do mindfulness. But mindfulness is hard. Right? We could spend our whole meditation period doing this kind of thing. And if you find yourself doing this, I assure you, you are not the first one to do this. So instead of actually being with our experience, we're having a type of debate in our mind, and we're lost in these abstract ideas that don't really have answers. I mean, the question about is this practice going to work? The answer to that, of course, is try it and find out. Right? That's really the only way to know for oneself. So the Buddha recognized this tendency for humans to do this, to kind of get lost in abstract ideas and to kind of have questioning our capabilities and having this hesitation or this vacillation. Maybe I should do this, maybe I shouldn't do that. Is this really right? This type of thing. And he called it vichikicca. It's kind of a nice word. And it's often translated as doubt or skeptical doubt. And maybe I would like to say it's more like swirling doubt. This idea of like having reservations, having hesitation, having vacillation, being indecisive, maybe even being suspicious. So it's this way in which we kind of go around and round in our thoughts, but we're not really getting anywhere, and we're not really landing in the present moment. We're busy with these kinds of thoughts that undermine our capabilities, undermine our capacity to actually land here and be mindful of what's happening. And this hesitation, this wavering, this vacillation, it gets in the way. It gets in the way of practice, and we end up not really going anywhere. Or it's not so much that the purpose of meditation is to get somewhere in particular, even though we do have this model of development, but instead there's a feeling of spinning one's wheels or just going into circles because we're lost in endless speculation or endlessly trying to decide which way to go. And the Buddha, he used a simile to describe this as crossing a desert. And in my imagination, it's a desert that's with these giant sand dunes, like nothing but sand dunes. And maybe it's windy. So it's kind of like hard to walk through, right? You know, sand dunes are not so easy to walk. And because it's windy, when you look behind, there are no footprints. So your footprints are getting washed away. And because it's the sand dunes, there aren't any landmarks. So you feel lost, like you don't know which direction to go. It's not clear where you've been, and it's not clear where you're going. And it's this uncomfortable experience that everywhere we look is just more sand, more sand, which is really uncomfortable. But if we pay a little bit closer attention, we can see that this doubt, vichikicca, is simply a loose collection of a certain family of thoughts that aren't onward leading but are going round and round. So this doubt is, just to maybe like drive home this point, because when we use this word doubt, we might think, well, of course, does this mean that we have to believe everything? We shouldn't have doubt? And that's not what we're saying. We're talking about the doubt where it's this not clear where to go next, maybe even unclear where you are now, and no sense of anything that's onward leading or sense of something that might be supportive. Because sometimes, to be sure, doubt is healthy. Doubt is helpful. In the same way that we might have this idea, the price of this object seems too good to be true. What's the catch? Right? That's a healthy type of doubt that we have in our daily life. But it's this part, what's the catch, that we ask ourselves, and then we try to find it. We read the footnotes. We look at, okay, is it this amount of money once, or is it, do I have to pay that monthly, or what, is there a catch? Maybe I can never unsubscribe, or I can never return it, or, you know, whatever it is. This idea of, like, what's the catch? So we look more closely to see, okay, what's happening here? We engage with what seems to not be quite right. We investigate. In the same way, we don't believe or disbelieve something simply because somebody told us, but often we hold things true provisionally, like, and we do maybe a quick mental check, or maybe it's not even mental, it's just, maybe it's somatic as well as mental, like, is this consistent with my experience? What do other wise people, people that I have respect for and that I believe have some wisdom or some knowledge on this topic, what do they say about it? So it's not that we have to believe or disbelieve, but just to investigate a little bit more. And this is very healthy. This is very helpful. To be sure, Buddhist practice is not about just adopting a certain amount of beliefs and there you go. That's all it is. Certainly, especially there's an emphasis in this tradition of Buddhism of practice. Some meditation practice, this being mindful, some concentration practice, getting settled, loving kindness practice, softening the heart. And then with practice, things unfold and we start to learn and understand things differently. And this healthy doubt asks the question, does this teaching and does this practice help lessen dukkha? Does it help free the mind? With this recognition that really the answer, how we can really know it for ourselves, is to actually do the practice, run the experiment and actually do it. We can also maybe read what other people have to say about it. There is no shortage of Dharma books these days. We can talk to a teacher. We can listen to a Dharma talk. We can have what we call Kalyanamitta, friends, spiritual friends, other people that have a practice that we can talk with. But sometimes this doubt is unhealthy and unhelpful, and that's what I'd like to talk a little bit more about. This when we're lost and stuck, just going round and around, teaching, asking questions, and it's maybe less asking specific questions and more just wondering, are these teachings from so long ago, is it really relevant thousands of years ago? And we can get stuck in this kind of like endless conjecture or this endless speculation. And it takes us away from the experience before it teaches us anything. And in some way, having this kind of speculation also supports indecision, which can support a habit of undermining ourselves. So it's also just exhausting to always be wondering and not to actually settle down and try the practice instead of trying to figure it out and wondering things. Okay, so how can we practice with this when we see that it's arising? Maybe first I'll say as doubt is rarely recognized as doubt initially. So often we can say some of the instructions are for other hindrances or for other experiences are just to recognize that hindrance or that experience, but doubt is a little bit difficult to recognize. So instead, we might say, we might recognize the hesitation, recognize the vacillation, recognize the indecision, recognize the confusion, and recognize the way in which we might be in a debate with ourselves of about this practice or which practice we should do or which Dharma talk we should listen to or something like that. So just notice that, the vacillation, the hesitation, the maybe some confusion. And as best we can we just allow that experience to be there without making it go away or without allowing all our aversion to rise up, but can we allow it to be there? And one way to support allow it to be there is first, maybe I'll offer this, that if we have this sense of confusion, like I'm confused, just to even say I'm confused is to recognize that you're confused. And then you're no longer confused. You're not confused. You know that confusion is present. And then that can shift the experience to just being with what's obvious. And maybe we might recognize that with this vacillation, hesitation, confusion, speculation, endless speculation, there's also some restlessness. It's the opposite of being settled, right? It doesn't support being settled. So maybe we just recognize that, oh, the body feels like it wants to run up or jump up and run away, and the mind is running all around or something like this. So we can maybe feel the uncomfortableness, like the uneasiness. I'm like wiggling in my seat. Maybe that's has that kind of a feeling. Or maybe there's this heaviness. So in this way, we could feel it in the body. Heaviness, this wanting to get up and run away, or this I'll offer those. We each have our own idea. Maybe there's a certain like buzzing in the head, this kind of this electric feeling or something like this. And maybe I'll just remind us that that's the first foundation of mindfulness, right? Is to be with the sensations in the body. So in this way, just doing this, recognizing, turning towards what's obvious, if it's helpful, using some labels, buzziness, tingling, heaviness, whatever it might be. And there we are, we're back into practice. It doesn't mean that the thoughts won't arise again and maybe we'll get lost, but then we can just notice what it is again and be with that experience. Sometimes it can be helpful, if that isn't sufficient, to remember thoughts are just thoughts. They're just thoughts. And then we might actually have just a gentle inquiry. What's the difference between a thought and a memory of a thought? Are they the same? Is remembering the thought, it's still a mental event. And the reason why I'm asking this is just maybe to take some of the substantiality that we might attribute to thoughts away. To see, like, wait, if a memory of a thought is not different than a thought, then, you know, then they somehow take some of their authority away. And just to recognize, okay, we're having a lot of thoughts. And maybe to remind ourselves they're just thoughts. They arise and pass away, just like everything else. And maybe we can also recognize that this is a mind, when that's happening, the mind is experiencing vacillation, restlessness, hesitation, or and just recognize, oh yeah, the mind is spinning in some kind of way. That could be the third foundation of mindfulness. You might recognize, oh, this is doubt. That would be the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Recognizing a hindrance. So in all these ways, just kind of like recognizing and being with the experience, whether it's the bodily experience, whether it's the quality of the mind, or it's just recognizing specific that thoughts arise, can help bring us back to the practice and can disrupt some of the momentum that we might have with all this thinking. But it might be that there is tremendous momentum. Maybe we have this doubt is showing up in our daily lives and with indecision and not being able to make decisions. For me, I'll say that this kind of doubt kind of shows up in when I'm driving. Should I go this way? Well, no, maybe I should go that way. Oh, but then the traffic, but it might be shorter. Okay, well, at this time, okay, maybe I'll go there. And somehow I feel like I can't decide whether I should go this way or that way, this route or another route. So there can be we could take that literally or maybe figuratively. Should I go this way or this other way? And if just recognizing what's happening and being with what's happening isn't enough to kind of like undermine and interrupt the momentum, then we can apply some antidotes. We can be a little bit more active about this. And one is we could do this gentle inquiry. Was there an uncomfortable experience that started this whole cascade of thinking? Or is there a view that I'm holding that things should be a certain way, that they have to be just right? So in this way, it's a type of investigation. And investigation is the antidote to doubt. Some religious traditions have faith as the antidote. In this tradition, investigation is the antidote. If you feel unsure, do what you can to see what helps you feel more sure. Talk to people, read, or just investigate your experience. So when we're on the cushion, we could just do this gentle inquiry, like maybe unpack the experience. Like, okay, I can see that I have this underlying view that things need to be just right. And or I can see that this whole thing started because, yeah, I'm feeling a little restless. All day I've been a little bit restless, or all day I've been really tired and have this sloth and torpor. And now this uncomfortable experience met the inner critic. They got together and they kind of came up with these sayings like, oh, I can't do it. Or this practice, I'm not sure this practice works. So to do a little bit of investigation, to unpack, like, how did you get here? So that could be maybe a little bit more actively getting involved with the experience. We might also gently inquire, is there fear underneath this? Sometimes there's fear that's really fueling our doubt. Without this turning into yet another, like, big giant project, but a gentle inquiry, like dropping in the question, opening up to the question, and then feeling into the answer. So not so much like thinking our way to the answer. Of course, thinking is involved, but feeling our way to the answer, right? We don't want to just create the conditions in which we're just thinking, 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 wondering, 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 trying to figure it out. But can we do an inquiry in which we can feel our way? We can drop in a question and then open up and listen for an answer. So that's one antidote, is to investigate. Another antidote is to openly inquire, to ask ourselves, what do I have confidence in? What do I know about this practice? What do I know about what I'm capable of doing? I have sat here during a meditation period before. This practice has brought some settledness, some ease, some insights. I have heard things from a teacher that really resonated with me and made a difference. I do know people who are Buddhist practitioners who seem to be moving in the world without causing harm to others, or not very much harm. So we might just spend a little time reflecting, what do I have confidence in? To kind of like interrupt this vacillation, and what do we know from our experience? What is uplifting? What can support us? Maybe we know that meditation sessions don't end necessarily the way they begin. So if we find ourselves caught in this vacillation or hesitation, doesn't mean that we're going to have it for the whole rest of the period, meditation session. Another way to work with doubt is to apply what's called wise attention. Yonisomanasikara is the Pali for this. I say those words because I just like the way that they sound. And the Buddha talks about this. This is what the Buddha says as an antidote for doubt. Here's an excerpt from a sutta. And the Buddha says, there are things that are the basis for doubt. Frequently giving careless attention is the nutriment for the arising of unrisen doubt and for the increase of and expansion of doubt that has arisen. So careless attention gives rise to doubt. And if doubt's already there, careless attention makes there be more doubt. And then continues, and what is the denourishment? You know, it's kind of a clunky translation. If we're going to say what is the nourishment of doubt in Pali, it's just the opposite of nourishment. So this translator is doing denourishment. If we were to say the word starvation, that just, I don't know, to my ear, sounds cruel or something. So we'll use this word denourishment. And what, so the Buddha continues in the sutta, and what is the denourishment that prevents doubt from arising, and when doubt has already arisen, prevents it from increasing and expanding? There are wholesome and unwholesome states. There are blamable and blameless states. There are inferior and superior states. There are dark and bright states. Frequently giving careful attention to these is the denourishment that prevents doubt from arising, and if doubt has already arisen, to prevent doubt from increasing and expanding. So recognizing, oh, wholesome and unwholesome, kusala and akusala, helpful and unhelpful, blamable and blameless, inferior and superior, dark and bright. So wise attention is to bring in what we know from our practice, from our lives, like, oh yeah, this is helpful, this isn't helpful. To use some discernment, to pay attention to those things that are a support for practice. If we are feeling greedy or a lot of desire or something that's getting in the way of our practice in our life, we don't spend all our time looking at photos of those things that we want. We don't spend imagining all those things that we want. We don't fuel the desire by always bringing the objects of desire to mind or in the visual field or hearing them or whatever. So wise attention is to pay attention to what's supportive for us. And to bring in mind, what do we know from the teachings that we have confidence in about what's wise and what's not wise? What's helpful and what's not helpful? And then if we have paid attention to the experience of this vacillation and hesitation, we've brought in antidotes and we still find ourselves completely caught up and filled with doubt. One thing that we might do is to do something for somebody else. Be generous with words, actions, effort. Help somebody else. Do something for somebody else. And in this way, it can help really soften and interrupt this kind of vacillation that we find ourselves in. And then it just creates the conditions for something else to unfold. If we were to do something for somebody else. So doubt can be really pernicious. It can undermine our entire practice. But there's a way in which we can be with it, and we can turn it, instead of being an obstacle, it can just be the object of practice. Like, instead of being a roadblock, it can be a stepping stone to just further practice. It doesn't have to be a problem. We can practice with it. And in this way, as we learn to practice with whatever arising, and this way can we be practiced in such a way that it's a benefit for ourselves and a benefit for others. Thank you.